the two words I am are the two most important words in the English language because they open you up to a world of possibility or they limit your world. So I am not a reader versus I am a reader. Yeah, it was kind of like this big epiphany on day one. It wasn't financial freedom or entrepreneurship that unlocked. It was sort of this pathway of lifelong learning. It was humility. It was like, wow, there are so many amazing people out there doing amazing things. They've condensed decades of life experience in their greatest life lessons focused on one subject into a book that you can purchase for $20.
The Happy Healthy Human podcast will help you build your happy, healthy life. Your host, Paul Levitin, is a board-licensed health and wellness coach, nutrition coach, personal trainer, and behavior change specialist with over 10 years of experience helping people create positive life change. Each week, he discusses topics that will help you understand yourself, why you do the things you do, and how to take steps to create the life of your dreams. He talks with experts from therapists to addictions counselors, coaches, trainers, CEOs, financial planners, and more. If you've ever wondered how can you become the best, happiest, healthiest version of yourself, you've come to the right place.
I consider myself an avid reader, but longtime listeners here will know I wasn't always this way. I started reading in my late 20s, and since then, reading books and listening to podcasts have literally changed my life beyond what I can even put into words. And that's why I'm so excited for you to hear this conversation today with Nick Hutchinson. Nick is the visionary force behind BookThinkers, a thriving seven-figure marketing agency that brings authors and readers together. In just over 7 years, he has cultivated a platform reaching over 1 million people monthly and hosts the top 2% global podcast, BookThinkers, Life-Changing Books, which features interviews with world-renowned authors. With a mission to inspire readers to take action, Nick authored Rise of the Reader, which delves into mastering reading habits and applying newfound knowledge to unlock potential. This conversation with Nick inspired me to go out and buy his book the very same day we recorded it. But after talking to him, I wanted to go beyond that. You know that this podcast is all about taking action. So I actually purchased 5 copies of Rise of the Reader to give away to you, the listener. Not only that, but when Nick heard what I did, he was gracious enough to match me. So I will be giving away 10 copies of Nick's brand new book, Rise of the Reader, to 10 lucky listeners. To win, all you have to do is leave a rating and review on the podcast platform that you're listening on. If you're leaving a review, make sure to mention Nick's episode name. And if you're listening on an app that doesn't do reviews, only ratings, that's fine too. Simply screenshot it and message me on Instagram at Paul Levitin, or send the screenshot in an email to paul@paullevitin.com, and that's it. You're entered to win. I will draw the 10 winners and announce them here on this show in 3 weeks. So make sure that you get your submission in and subscribe so you don't miss the episode. Multiple entries definitely are accepted, so feel free to take your mom, your sister, your brother's phone, and do it up. No shame. All right? With that being said, listen to this conversation with Nick Hutchinson. What made you so passionate about reading that you decided to create a brand, a book, a podcast around helping others become bigger, better readers?
Well, the answer to that question is that books solved almost every problem that I had in my life in a very short period of time and created a sense of fulfillment, removed financial anxiety, built confidence. And so that's why. But here's the story. Here's the backstory. When I was growing up, I was not much of a reader. I was more of the athlete stereotype, not really much of the academic. And that behavior continued with me through most of my college experience as well. I'd rather be in the gym, playing basketball, hanging out at the dining hall, not doing my homework, right? But when I was going into my senior year of college, I took an internship at a local software company. It was a sales internship. And very quickly, my boss, Kyle, took me on a couple of local sales trips, and he would put on business podcasts. And this was a new concept to me. I didn't think business podcasting was cool. I'm like, what's the value in this? That's dry. Like, throw on some good music. But Kyle was a cool guy. Like, he'd go out to the bars, he'd party. You know, he's an easy guy to talk to. And he was talking about the value of listening to these shows. So because I had about an hour commute each way, 5 days a week that summer, I started listening to shows as well. And very quickly, I realized that so many of the successful people being interviewed gave at least some credit for their success to the books that they were reading. And so I'm over here like deliberately choosing not to read and also deliberately choosing to live under my potential, because the successful people I want to be like, they're recommending books. And I'm over here like, you don't need books to be successful. So I sucked that up for a minute. I went to my local Barnes & Noble, grabbed a bunch of books, and the rest is history, man. It's like with precision, every single time I face a problem, I can find somebody else who already solved it, read and implement the book, and it's like magic.
It is like magic, and it's interesting. Just you telling that story is so almost exactly like my story with reading and with everything. It was the same exact thing. I was not a reader growing up. I didn't read. I say often half braggingly, but also kind of ashamedly, that I didn't read a book from the time I was about 15 to about 28, like literally through high school, through college. Like, I made it a point to be like, I don't need to read that book. Even when a book was assigned to me in a class or something like that. Like,
same.
I was like proud that I didn't have to buy any of the textbooks for my college courses. I was like, I'm not wasting money on those books. So I literally did not read. And then I got a job as a personal trainer. And my manager at the time, his name was Chris, he actually gave me a CD of Brian Tracy. And Brian Tracy is, you know, the sales guru of all old time sales gurus. And it was one of his books on CD. And I started reading that. And then one of the guys at the front desk at my gym gave me the book Think and Grow Rich. And Think and Grow Rich is also, you know, it's one of those, the OG of OGs. It's written in like the 1920s or something like that. And I'm like reading this book and I'm like, this could have been written today. This was like 2013 or 2015 or something like that. It's like, what, like, and he's talking about all of these things that are just like, you know, making your life better and surrounding yourself with the people that, you know, will build you up and all of these principles. And I'm like, okay, like there's another way out there to live. Like, it's not just work to party, to drink, to work again, to make enough money to then go drinking and partying. It's like, yeah, I can live like that, but like, maybe there are other options. So that this book, you know, Think and Grow Rich specifically, really opened my mind to it. And that's what kind of got me on a tangent of diving deeper into that style of, you know, what I call personal development books. I don't like the term self-help, personal development. So I'm curious if there was a specific book that really changed things for you, or got the ball rolling and got you interested in this stuff.
Yes. And before I tell you what that book was, I want to make a comment on the two books that you mentioned, or the two people that you mentioned. So a couple of years ago, I was fortunate to receive an inbound email from Brian Tracy's team asking if I could interview him for an updated version of Eat That Frog that he was putting out for students. And so that was a really cool moment for me, because I also worked in sales for a while and I read and listened to a lot of Brian Tracy stuff. And so that was a fun moment for me, getting the chance to interview him for an hour and a half a couple of years ago. And then also Think and Grow Rich, that was probably the 10th or 15th book that I read. But there's a quote that Napoleon Hill says, which is sort of the basis for everything I do today. Napoleon Hill said, action is the real measure of intelligence. Action. Not reading for the sake of reading, but reading to implement and change your behavior. That's intelligence. So to go back to your question, the book that I started with was Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And very quickly, I mean, like within the first couple of pages, I'm like, okay, this is my new identity. Because it unlocked so many different pathways, so many different potential futures in my life that I was previously unaware of. And so I owe a lot to that book. I mean, I was a business student that didn't know anything about money. I would shy away from conversations about investing or financial literacy related topics. And then I went back to school after that summer internship where I developed my passion for reading, and I was leading those conversations. So if you can overcome an insecurity for $20 and a few hours of your time, why wouldn't you just do that again with precision, like shot, 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 just remove all of them.
I think that if you took a vote or a poll of entrepreneurs, CEOs, successful people of the book that got them going, Rich Dad, Poor Dad would 100% be in the top five, if not the top three or number one. I mean, it's yeah. It's like clockwork that so many people have had their lives changed by that. And I think a big piece of it is what you mentioned about the identity piece. It's who am I? I was not a reader and now I am. And James Clear talks about this in Atomic Habits, right? When you adopt an identity, it makes you that much more likely to pursue the habits and the routines that a person with that identity would do. So I'm curious, when you read that book and you said like, it changed who I am, was that I became a reader? Was that I became an entrepreneur? Was that I became interested in money? Like, what was the first shift?
Well, we can explore it in real time. I don't know if I've ever articulated what the first shift was before. When I went to Barnes & Noble, I had a list in my hand and it had five or six books on it. And I found all five or six books. One of them was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, because so many of the people being interviewed on these podcasts that I was listening to, they were giving credit to Rich Dad, Poor Dad for starting their journey. I also grabbed four or five other books that I just saw. I was like, whoa, that's a cool subject. I didn't know people have written about this before. And when I was checking out at the register, they said, would you like a membership card? And I remember thinking, at least now I can articulate this part. I remember thinking, well, a reader, somebody who's serious about personal development, they'd have a membership card, like a discount card. And so I got one. I signed up. Not only did it give me a 20% discount on that first purchase, which saved me a lot of money back then, I was a broke college student, but I carried that card around in my wallet. So I think that right on that first day, which is also the same day that I opened up Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, I just stepped into this new identity. Just like James Clear talks about it in Atomic Habits, I always reference Limitless by Jim Quick. And Jim says the two words, I am, are the two most important words in the English language because they open you up to a world of possibility or they limit your world. So I am not a reader versus I am a reader. Yeah, it was kind of like this big epiphany on day one. So I think with Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it wasn't financial freedom or entrepreneurship that unlocked. It was sort of this pathway of lifelong learning. It was humility. It was like, wow, there are so many amazing people out there doing amazing things. They've condensed decades of life experience and their greatest life lessons focused on one subject into a book that you can purchase for $20. And you don't have to go through the experience yourself. You can learn all of the lessons that they learned. It's like a shortcut. Sometimes I joke around with people. I'm 29 years old when we're recording this, turning 30 soon. But if you include all the books behind me, I'm thousands of years old. That's what it unlocked for me. Just like a different life pathway of potential. And I didn't know that it would be entrepreneurship, and it is today. But freedom, you know, like a free mindset, a limitless mindset.
I think it's Warren Buffett who's credited with saying this, but or maybe it's also I've heard it from Eleanor Roosevelt or different people. But the concept of, you know, people talk about learning from mistakes and that you should learn from your mistakes. But Warren Buffett, I believe, said that you shouldn't learn from your mistakes. You should learn from the mistakes of others. Right? Mm-hmm. And that's how you can speed up the learning curve. And that's what books are. You're taking exactly that, thousands of years of knowledge and compressing them into a few hours of reading. And what you're reading in an afternoon or a week took someone an entire lifetime to learn and distill down. So that's one of the extremely powerful aspects of becoming a reader. I'm interested though, you brought up Jim Quick, who's one of my favorites. His books, his podcast was revolutionary for me. It definitely changed my life. And I'm curious how you feel about it. I'll give you my opinion afterwards, but speed reading is something that he teaches. Being the reading guy, I've heard varied opinions on this. What do you think about speed reading?
I have mixed feelings on it as well. I'll tell you what I optimize for today. I optimize for enjoying the passage of time. That's how I define happiness, success, purpose, whatever you want to call it. I want to do more of what I enjoy and less of what I don't. And when I practice speed reading, and maybe as Jim Quick would recommend, remove sub-vocalization, right, for the sake of efficiency, I don't enjoy it as much. And so although it is more efficient, I don't enjoy the process as much. Now, I still read pretty fast. I read a lot faster than I did a few years ago when I first started, but I want to enjoy the process. I don't think that slow and steady wins the race when reading, but I don't think that speed reading for the sake of pure efficiency wins the race either. I like some kind of middle ground there. Does it make sense?
Yeah, 100%. And a few different points that I want to tug on from that. One is that you just said that you do read faster now than you did in the beginning. So just to point out for people listening, reading is a skill. It is a muscle. Mm-hmm. Just like when you go to the gym, the first time you lift up 5 pounds, it's heavy. And now you might lift 25 pounds or 500 pounds and it feels lighter. And just like that, reading through the very virtue of doing the thing over and over and over will improve and you will become better at it, whether you try it or not. Simply putting in the reps will make you improve. So the thought of being a bad reader is more something that you haven't practiced enough, and that will just inherently improve over time. But what I'd like to really for you to kind of expand on a bit was about efficiency versus enjoyment. And this is a big one, especially again, for me personally, because I get caught in the trap of, I read a lot, but it's all in that, again, personal development, self-help, nonfiction world. And I know that there's value in the fiction and the sci-fi, and there's amazing things that are written, but I get caught up in the efficiency trap. So I'm curious, how do you balance those out? Do you keep a cadence to what you're reading? Do you read fiction or other things?
Well, I've sort of designed a life where my full-time job is sort of reading. You know, I say that a little bit tongue in cheek because that's not technically my full-time job, but it's a part of what I do. So I have a lot of space and time to read, and I like to kind of, again, it's not slow and steady, but it's a joy-filled pace for me. Jim Quick has a metaphor in Limitless where he says, imagine you're driving through a neighborhood, but you're going really slow. As a result of driving slow, you have the ability for your mind to wander a little bit, to notice the landscaping, the houses, the cars in the driveway, etc. But if you were driving really fast, you don't have the ability to focus on those things. Your eyes are glued to the road. And so with reading, I try to stay on pace so that I don't let my mind wander by reading a little bit faster than I feel comfortable reading. But I don't, again, remove sub-vocalization, read every third word, you know, that type of stuff. We actually interviewed Howard Berg on our podcast and Jim. I think there were back-to-back episodes. Howard Berg had the Guinness World Record for speed reading at one point, and he has a crazy system. But again, I don't want to lose the joy. Like, I love going through a book, implementing a couple of things, really reflecting on it, learning from that person, feeling the excitement. And I don't think that happens if you just read too fast. Like, I want to create space in my life to enjoy the book and use the book. So also, I don't really read much fiction. Like, I genuinely enjoy reading nonfiction. I think I'm going to be forever curious about a million different subjects. And so most of what I'm reading, which is about 100 books a year, which I know sounds crazy, but again, I kind of do it full time, is... you know, I don't read a lot of fiction. It's mostly nonfiction, personal development type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the exact same boat. I've been on pace to read 100 books a year for like the last 3 or 4 years. And usually that's about 95 nonfiction and 3 to 5 fiction books that I kind of shoehorn in there because sometimes those fiction books are like The Alchemist or Burchard, that are kind of like, it's like an allegory, which is still the same type of thing. So I'm right there with you. Yeah, to me, it's always like, there's so much I want to learn. I could read a book a day for the rest of my life, and I wouldn't even crack into a percent of the knowledge that's out there. So it's hard for me to look at anything else and like not be so, and there's so many interesting topics. And that's another thing where, you know, people talk about like not being readers. It's like, have you really looked? Have you looked at what's out there? Because if you search, there's something that you're interested in that there's a book about that, like you said, you could be better at simply from the virtue of dedicating just a little bit of time. And That's something I wanted to, you've mentioned the word a few times already, you know, implementation and action. And your book is called Rise of the Reader, Strategies for Mastering Your Reading Habits and Applying What You Learn. So what I want to talk about is the application there, the last few words there, application, implementation, action, all kind of the same. How important is that piece and what made you want to, you know, pour that on so heavily right at the end?
I think it's the most important piece. So behind the scenes, I've been reviewing books on social media for a long time, since 2017, 2018. And as that community has grown, we now have about 150,000 followers on Instagram and maybe another 50,000 on other platforms. As that community has grown, I've answered the same questions hundreds and hundreds of times. People will reach out, hey, Nick, how do I choose the right book? How do I take great notes? How do I retain more from the books I'm reading? How do I implement more? How do I take better action? And that's the piece that I started to specialize on because I think my magic in life is action. That's sort of my one word. I think all progress comes from taking action, not just thinking about taking action. There's a lot of great quotes around this. So as I started to analyze my own behavior, I started to realize that I was doing things most people don't do. And I'll give you an example. And there are dozens in the book. But each time I open up a new book, I set a SMART goal for the book. So for anybody that's not familiar with it, SMART is an acronym that stands for specific, measurable, attainable, meaning it's possible for you to achieve it, relevant, which means you're emotionally connected to the outcome, and T stands for time bound. You give yourself a deadline to take action. So if I was going to read a book like, well, we could talk about one of the ones, Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. Nowadays, I don't just open the book and hope that it's going to change my life, right? I'm not optimizing for finishing the book and checking the box. I'm optimizing for action. So I'll set an actionable goal, a SMART goal, something like find and implement at least 2 new financial literacy strategies by the end of November or something like that. And so I'm baking in action as part of that process. That goal is specific. It's measurable. Did I find and implement at least 2 things? I know whether or not the book was successful for me. Attainable. I didn't say make $1 million by the end of November. Just find and implement 2 new financial literacy frameworks or strategies. It's relevant to my life. I'm emotionally connected to the outcome. I'm not reading for the sake of reading. I'm reading for the sake of taking action and improving my life, solving a problem, developing a skill, closing the gap between where I am now and where I want to be in life. And time bound, you want to give yourself a deadline to take action because so many of us are guilty of not setting a deadline and as a result, not taking any action on the books that we read. And so then what I'll do is I'll write that intention, that SMART goal for the book on the inside cover, and I'll reread it every time I read another chapter because our brains have this wonderful reticular activating system or a filtering system built in. And if you share your goal with the book and you refresh it every chapter, the book will share that information, those actionable strategies back with you. So that's why I don't like to speed read because I want to stop when I find one of those actions that I'd like to implement. And I want to circle it. I want to circle that page number. I want to highlight the section I want to go back to. Kind of following through with this example, I do separate reading and note-taking. I think they're completely separate. And you're a productivity efficiency guy. I am guilty of it a little bit too, which I think is a good thing. And no matter what book you read, there's sort of one underlying thing. Don't multitask. And so reading, which is just visual, maybe a little bit, you're flipping some pages, versus note-taking, which is a completely separate activity, right? It's like running versus swimming. You don't want to try to do them at the same time. And so once I go all the way through the book, I'll circle every potential action that I might take in the book. And then I'll go back through a second time in a second dedicated time block. And I'll go through and I'll analyze those 10 potential actions. And I'll say, well, it's not realistic to implement 10 things. That's not attainable. But I could implement 2. So which of these 2 potential actions can create the most meaningful change, right? 80-20. And that's how I end up taking action from the books I'm reading. I set a SMART goal. I separate reading and note-taking. I then rewrite all 10 potential actions that I've highlighted as a result of my SMART goal. And then I'll choose which ones I want to implement based on which ones have the most leverage. So Those are only a few of the things that I do, but that's kind of like following that example through, you know, at least to the action piece.
Yeah, that's huge. And I mean, smart, right? Actionable, right? That's exactly it. And I appreciate you sharing that. Obviously, the book is going to go into it much deeper, but I'm just curious, just to put a bow on that example. In the beginning, when you're setting those SMART goals, does that mean that you are looking at the table of contents? Are you looking at like the bat? Like, how are you deciding, like, just rich dad, poor dad, like, how do I know what even is a reasonable goal to set around this book?
Sometimes the goal is set prior to choosing the book. So I have in Rise of the Reader, I have a personal inventory or a list of questions that you can ask yourself when deciding on the next book. I think some obvious places to start are you facing a pain or a problem on a daily basis that you just can't get rid of? Because chances are somebody else has solved that problem already and they've documented it in a book. And so if you read that book and implement their solution, you could overcome it. I saw one time Jordan Peterson said, if you're facing a problem on a daily basis over the next 30 years, so 365 times 30, you're going to deal with it almost 11,000 times. So why not remove it? Why not deal with it 11,000 more times? So I think that's a great place to start. Like, you almost define your intention before you choose the book. But let's say that somebody gifted you a book and they said, hey, this is going to change your life. Like a mentor who has a greater perspective on your life than you do. Or you're really excited to read something that's popular for the sake of being able to discuss it with friends and family and stuff. I think, yes, read the front cover, read the back cover. You know, if it's a hardcover book, sort of read on the inside, maybe read the table of contents, get a good understanding of what the book's about. Maybe jump on Amazon or Goodreads and look at comments and reviews about the book so that you have a really good understanding of what the promise is. Most of the time, you could do that just on the cover and back cover of the book. And then you can set your intention because you'll know what the book is about and you'll know what you want to take action on, like what's emotionally relevant to you.
Emotionally relevant is a huge one as well. It's clear that you've done your reading. I think that being specific about, you know, the reason behind the what, right? It's the why behind the what of, you know, what do I want to get out of this book before I even start it, is extremely impactful, and it gives you a goal to work towards. Another, if Think and Grow Rich is the book that started me on this path, the book that really cracked my brain open and sent me down the rabbit hole was 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And that's the book I think I recommend the most to everyone to get started. And one of the habits is start with the end in mind. And I tell my clients this a lot, that very seldom do we reach a goal that we didn't set out for in the beginning. You don't just happen upon success. And that's the point of conversations like this and the point of reading all these books and doing all these podcasts. That's what I'm always looking for, is, you know, what is the golden thread that kind of interweaves amongst all success? You know, that's really what I want to talk about here. That's why I have this podcast. That's why I do all this reading. So I'm curious, you know, with you reading, you know, 500 plus books, 100 books a year, and talking to these authors even and having a deeper perspective, what are the things that you've seen that are the reading is one of them, but what are the meta habits that you've seen that are the principles, the bedrock of success that everything else is built on top of?
It's a great question. Yeah, I've been able to interview a lot of successful business people, a lot of very happy people, a lot of very healthy people. And I think that consistency is probably the number one thing. I mean, you mentioned Atomic Habits. One of my favorite books that predates that is The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. Very similar concept, that small steps in the right direction over a long period of time will lead to exponential progression or disproportionately positive outcomes. He has a great metaphor in that book that may be in Atomic Habits as well, where he says, imagine a plane is taking off from LA and it's headed to New York City. But as it's taking off, somebody shifts the nose of the plane just 1%, let's say, to the south. Well, it's almost imperceptible as that plane is flying for a while. But by the end of the route, it ends up 150 miles south somewhere in Delaware, right? By the end of the trip, it's pretty noticeable that the plane was moved 1%. So the question for me, and I think the question for a lot of these very successful people that I've had the chance to interview and be around is, what 1% habits are you participating in that will result in a very different life tomorrow or 10 years from now or 20 years from now in your health, in your wealth, in your happiness, in your relationships? And do those things every single day because they make a difference. Like, audit your life, look for little areas of improvement, and then perform them consistently. Just show up every single day. How do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? What are those 1% improvements? Or said another way, no matter how many times you read Aesop's fable, The Tortoise and the Hare, the tortoise always wins. The tortoise is taken one step at a time and it doesn't stop and it eventually wins the race. And that's how I think about all of these successful people. They just show up every single day and they do the right stuff. Using a James Clear analogy, every action or habit that you participate in today is a vote for the person you're becoming tomorrow. And so show up today, do the right things, and you will be successful over the long run. So I think that's probably the most common thread.
Yeah. And in that, I always say it's funny, right? We all know consistency is key, right? That's what every person will say that. It's like, but the challenge becomes, how do I be consistent, right? There's no pill for consistency. There's no magic. It's, you know, you want to say it's discipline. You want to say it's grit. We have all these buzzwords, and there's no easy answer other than what you just said, which is just show up. When it's easy, show up. And those are, I call those gimmies, right? The days where you want to show up, when you want to do the thing, when you want to work out, when you want to read, when you want to do your business, like, it's like, love those. Those are layups. It's, do you show up on the days when you don't want to? Can you show up on the days when it's raining outside and you have to go do a 5-mile run? Can you show up on the days when you're supposed to read for 20 minutes, but a new episode of whatever show just dropped and everyone's going to be talking about it tomorrow? So it's doing it, doing the work, you know, not just when it's easy, not just when it's convenient, but doing it all the time. And in that regard, you know, I'm curious, some of the things I want to talk about are more on the logistical side of being a reader and doing the thing and showing up daily. And one of the things that I'd be curious about, this being a podcast and an audio and you being a podcaster as well, is your thoughts on audiobooks versus physical reading. And is that something that you suggest for people, or do you find a difference between the two?
I love podcasts and I love audiobooks, but I do understand that 80% of the inputs to our brain are visual. So by default, if you're only listening to something and you're multitasking because you're in the gym or you're driving or you're doing chores, you won't retain or implement as much from that material. That's a fact. But is an audiobook or a podcast better than listening to the same song for the 2000th time? Yeah, absolutely it is. I still get excited by listening to books. I probably listen to 25 books a year, and I probably listen to hundreds of podcast episodes a year. So I do have some love for them. But reading a physical paper book, that act is an act of monotasking, focused on one activity, leveraging your visual input, which is the most powerful way to form a connection in your brain to a piece of material or a new aha moment. So yeah, I'm a big paper, physical paper book kind of guy, but I think that there's definitely space for audio material and podcasting. And, you know, maybe today this show, somebody's listening to it right now and they're in the car, they're doing chores or whatever, busy work. And they say, hey, you know what? I do want to pick up a book. Like, you can still take action from information that you're only listening to, especially if it's new and fun and different. But you are at a disadvantage if you're reading the same material versus just listening to it. I think the best scenario, which I recommend in the introduction to my book, is actually reading and listening to the same material at the same time. That's a fun life hack.
And that is also one of those brain hacks that I think Jim Quick or one of those guys talks about, because now you're taking your double inputs, you're taking it in absorbing it that much more powerfully. I'm a big on, you know, realistic versus optimal, right? So for me, for listeners,
yes,
it's about what is going to get you there. And like, we can talk about that reading a paper book is optimal, which I do agree, obviously, for all the reasons that you just said, right? Like, there is a literal difference of how it interacts with your brain. You feel the pages, it smells good. It gives you a more visceral response, right? You'll remember where you sat and read something for the first time. Seldom will you remember where you were when you listened to a podcast for the first time. Even if you do remember the information, it triggers a different part of your brain. But at the same time, if you're someone listening and you're going, well, I'm just not going to do that. I'm not going to read for whatever reasons, but I will listen to an audiobook version, or I will listen to a podcast of Nick talking about the book, then that's a great place for you to be. So I just, you know, for anyone listening, I just don't want people to think that there's any standard that you have to be held to or anything like that. Whatever works for you works for you. And you know, one page is better than no pages. So that, I just wanted to put that out there. If this is something I work with my clients on all the time, is done is better than perfect. But I'm curious, another like logistical thing that I want to know your opinion on is, what about, you know, you kind of mentioned already, there's so many books out there, infinite books, right? We talked about that. So where are you at with rereading books?
If I've read 500 individual books, I'd say that 5% of them, so 25 books, have probably created 95% of the impact. And I, from my own perspective, would be foolish not to revisit those books from time to time. And so, yeah, I do reread some of my favorite books. And what's fun about it is that it's almost like a new read every single time. I get different things from it. Maybe it's a Buddhist saying, you can never step in the same river twice. So the river has changed, but so have you. And I think you can never read the same book twice, not because the book has changed, but because you've changed. You're reading with a different perspective. And so some of the books that I've reread the most include Atomic Habits, The Compound Effect, The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, $100 Million Offers by Alex Hormozy, The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, The Go-Giver by Bob Berg and John David Mann, The Almanac of Naval Ravikant by Eric Jorgensen, because those books have created such a big impact in my life. And there's a good mix of revisiting material that you know you already enjoy versus reading something new, which is unknown and different. So there's that question. And I'll throw one other perspective out there. When you're first starting out and you're brand new to the industry and you're just starting reading, I say read as many books as you can on as many different subjects as you can, and don't worry about implementation. Don't worry about rereading the best books. Don't even worry about going deep. But as you start to understand the world of personal development, what's out there, what solves problems for you, what skills you want to develop, then I think it's important to become a little bit more selective over time, to reread material that you know is important and to go deeper on subjects that matter more to you. And so like Alex Hormozy, for instance, would say it's better to read the same book 100 times than 100 different books. Yeah, once you have context for what's important to you. So read a ton of random stuff at first. Read all the bestsellers. They're bestsellers for a reason. And then get a little bit more narrow as you develop.
I think that's a great point. And another thing that makes me wonder, in your opinion, on is, are you a start as many books as possible, but only finish the ones that hook you person? Or are you finish the book because you never know what golden nugget could be lying on page 367?
Yeah, that's another tough one. When I first started, I was optimizing for finishing a book. And so that meant every word of every page. And it's a little bit of a vanity metric, right? Finishing a number of books doesn't necessarily move the needle of your life. I heard Tim Ferriss and Ryan Holiday one time talk about something called the rule of 100. So I think it was Ryan said, take the number 100 and subtract your age. That's how many pages you have to read before you can put a book down. So for me, I'm 29. I have to read 71 pages before I can put a book down. Their argument was that life is too short to read a bad book. And although you may be three feet from gold, after you read enough, you kind of know whether or not that gold is in the back of the book or not. So I will allow myself to put down a book if, A, it's not a great book and it's not going to solve the original intention that I set, or B, like something else takes priority in my life. You know, if you're reading about something that's satisfying curiosity, but then a major problem presents itself, you don't have to force yourself to finish the book. I think that you can reprioritize it to the back of the list and deal with something a little bit more urgent. So that's how I think about it.
Yeah, I think that's quite fair. And it is exactly like you said, vanity metrics. You know, I get caught in them too, right? Like when I read 100 books, I was proud. I was like 100, triple digits. Like, what does that mean? Did I implement, as to Alex Hormozy's point and your point, would I have gotten more for my life if I would have read 10 books and spent more time implementing them? It's quite possible and probably probable that that would have been the better route for me. And I think that, like all things in life, it's finding that middle ground. And it's not as simple as one or the other. It's the gray area that we have to be comfortable with the ambiguity. So as we start to kind of wrap up here, I'm curious, obviously, just from talking here, anyone who isn't already going to put your book in an Amazon cart is crazy, because there's, and just in this conversation, I'm already a big reader, and I've gotten some great takeaways and tips from you. So I'm really appreciative of that. But I'm wondering, what are some books that are maybe you're currently reading, or some that you've read in the most recent months that have really stood out to you, that you're just like, this one is, you know, on that list of The Compound Effect, Atomic Habits, Think and Grow Rich, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, like I'm putting this up there on that list.
Arnold Schwarzenegger just put out a brand new book about being useful, and it's a fantastic read. Arnold has the greatest dream to reality ratio out of anybody that I've ever seen. He went from growing up in rural Austria in a house that had no plumbing to the world's most successful bodybuilder, at one point the highest paid movie star, business owner, and then running one of the largest standalone economies in the world as the governor of California. So that book is all about, again, being useful. I think it has 7 kind of core messages, and they're all very, very, very good. So I highly recommend that book. Elon Musk by Walter Isaacson. Walter Isaacson's one of my favorite biographers, and he just put out a book on Elon Musk, sort of detailing childhood up until modern day. And it's fascinating to get behind the scenes with somebody who's creating such a wildly big impact on this planet. So whether or not you like Elon as an individual doesn't matter. There's a lot that you can learn from somebody who's running SpaceX, who's running Tesla, who's running X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Tesla has Solar City, and they're building robots and all sorts of other things. And it's, you know, and there are plenty of other companies that he's involved with, but it's just fascinating to see what a human being is capable of doing as a standalone person. And a brand new one that I'm just getting started with is The Daily Pressfield by Stephen Pressfield. So your audience might be familiar with something like The Daily Stoic by Ryan Holiday or The Daily Laws by Robert Greene, but Stephen Pressfield, absolute legend in the nonfiction, personal development, but also fiction space, just put out a brand new book that has a daily lesson about overcoming resistance and taking better action in your life. And so I'm excited about that one too.
Yeah, I've just added all 3 of those to my list, so I appreciate that. And I do love a good daily reader. I have The Daily Stoic and The Daily Laws both next to my bed, and Stephen Pressfield is probably the number one guy of all the number one guys in that world. So I, you know, The War of Art, for anyone who hasn't read it, whether you're an artist or not, is a life-changing book. I don't think there's anyone who's ever read that book and not come out with an altered perspective on their life. So that's, to me, that's one of my, I keep a list of, you know, when I read a book, I kind of have a little ranking system of like how, you know, likely I am to recommend it to others or reread it myself. And it's like some books I put on a list of like must read for all humans. Like, I just think that
yes,
the human race would be better if every person read this book. And you know, that's on my short list. So I appreciate you throwing those out there. The last question that I have for you, Nick, it's the same question that I ask all my guests. And it's simply, if you had one action step, we've talked about taking action already today, one action step that listeners can take right now, as soon as this episode ends, as soon as they take their headphones off, to start living a happier, healthier life, what would it be?
It would be to buy a gratitude journal that asks you to write three things every single day that you're grateful for. And I could have said read for 15 minutes a day, but I think gratitude is more important than reading. At least it has been in my life. One of my favorite quotes is from an Indian monk named Gaur Gopal Das, and he says that it's not happy people that are grateful, but it's grateful people that are happy. Gratitude is the input. Happiness is the output. Gratitude's the action step. And I think the simplest way to show up every single day and practice gratitude is just to write three things that you're grateful for. And that can happen in one of these simple little journals.
I love that plot twist. You didn't say reading and you said writing.
Yes.
I appreciate that. That's awesome, Nick. And I mean, you can't get more actionable than that. I really do appreciate it. The power of gratitude is something that we can't overlook. And, you know, for people who want to dive into what you're doing, I have links in the show notes for everyone listening for Nick's new book on Amazon, for his Instagram, for everything that he's doing. But where's the one place if people want to follow along with your journey or get more involved with you, where should I point them to?
Well, if anybody, even though we've talked about like 10 different books today and my book, if anybody still isn't sure of where they'd like to start, you can DM me on Instagram at BookThinkers and tell me about a problem you're facing or a skill that you want to develop or a subject that you're curious in, and I will provide a custom book recommendation to you. And so that's available to anybody listening to this. And it's one of my favorite things to do is play book matchmaker. So you can be vulnerable. It won't be shared with anybody else. And I respond to everybody.
That's super cool. That's a really cool thing that you're doing. I appreciate that. And you do have hundreds of thousands of followers. So I'm sure that can be a little time consuming. And it's really awesome that you're putting that out there. Well, Nick, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being here. I really did enjoy this.
Before I let you go, as I mentioned in the intro of this episode, we are giving away 10 copies of Nick's brand new book, Rise of the Reader. As you heard in the episode, it's chock full of actionable tips to help you not only be a better reader, but to take those books that you're reading and put them into action so that you can actually use the knowledge of all of those people who have taken their life's work and packed it into a few short pages. So take a second. If you're on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating and review. If you're on Spotify, rate this show 5 stars and screenshot your rating and send it to me on Instagram or to my email. My info is in the show notes. I'll contact the winners and send these books out in time to spread some Christmas cheer.
That's all for this week. Be sure to subscribe and follow the show so you don't miss a beat. Support the show by sending this episode to a friend or leaving a rating and review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Stay happy, stay healthy.